This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And that's me. Welcome out about it, boys and girls. Happy August of 2010. Where does the time go? That's right, August 1st of year 2010. We will be having an interesting discussion today about generational differences. Isn't that right, guest?
That's correct. Fascinating.
Fascinating. And I believe that, too. So write down the phone number. Stretch out the fingers. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. This is Rick Moore with WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. And that is Pete Ronayne from the Federal Executive Institute, the Dean of Faculty.
Former Dean of Faculty.
How do you pronounce that? I believe we heard it as Roynane, Ronnie Nani. It's, you know, but you said it was something that you grew up as a kid with that problem.
That Y in the middle of my name has meant a lifetime of pronunciation persecution. Mm. So, yep.
But you're
not like Rick Moore. I mean that's,
yeah.
You know, Semfre, yeah.
Well, thank you. But I can pronounce it properly. One of the few things that I hope to not have a mistake with today, single-digit number of mistakes, always my goal here. Pete Ronayne, Federal Executive Institute Dean of Faculty. For those of you in the Charlottesville area, that's that pretty white building up on the hill, sort of across from the Bodos there on Emmett Street. And what does the Federal Executive Institute do?
Yeah, you know, to demystify it, it's not a drying out facility, and it's not no alien autopsies, at least to my knowledge. We do basically leadership development, executive education for the nation's fine public servants who work at the federal level.
And speaking of those at the federal level, maybe some of you are listening on Harrisonburg's 95.1. Thank you for the day. And maybe some of you, everyone out there likes the Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, who's allowing us to have mysterious federal executive people here in the studio with us today.
Do I have the black line in front of my eyes? Just you know, the black bar?
No, but for those of you who might be listening, there might be that unusual sound from your voice being slightly garbled. And the Blue Ridge Mountain Sports folks allowing us to joke around during the hour. They are fully stocked with a selection of kayaks and canoes for the perfect getaway. You'll find canoes by Mad River, plus all styles of kayaks from Wilderness Systems. Also at Blue Ridge, it's stand-up paddle boats for the lake, river, or ocean. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barrack Show Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're on West Broad and in the Chesterfield Town Center in Richmond, and online, brms.com. All right, a conversation today about generational differences in the workplace. So everyone listening, and those of you who should run out and get inside or call up to turn on the radio to the proper dial should be involved in the conversation. Generational differences in the workplace. Pete, this is a project you've been working on. You've been traveling the country talking about this to folks. Give us a little bit about, actually, one of the interesting things I found in doing my homework for this, 80% of Americans believe that there is a significant generational divide,
right,
in the U.S.
Exactly. From the Pew Research Center numbers that came out, I think, just last summer, so fairly recent, in a wide-ranging survey in which they did find that. They found that, exactly as you mentioned, 80% of us are feeling this and are perceiving this. And to put that in some sort of perspective, the previous high water mark was around 1970, 1971, where 74% of Americans reported, you know, feeling that generational tumult and a little bit of turbulence. So 80% now, and that's high. So it raises an interesting question for us, which is why. In fact, I'll play with you, Rick, and kick it back. Why do you think that is exactly? I mean, what would be going on today as opposed to 1970, 71, which pretty turbulent time, that has us feeling and perceiving this at an 80% clip?
Well, I guess my guess would be technology.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my number one reason, would be technology, because and the money that goes along with that is that from and you have these four different generations here that I got from you, and we'll define them in a moment. Traditionalists, baby boomers, Generation X, and the current generation being the millennials.
Mm-hmm.
And cultural has changed so much during that time period with technology, how that defines your relationships and your work and the money that you make and spend. So to me, that would be the number one reason. I don't have any idea if that's true or not.
Well, it certainly is. And when you talk with people, that's probably number one on their radar, where they think this is coming from. Now, you know, to frame that and put it into some perspective, there's always technology. Every generation, every cohort has its technology, whether that was the telegraph or the radio or the printing press or your Walkman, or, you know, we all have new technologies. I think we could argue, though, fairly, and to your point, that the rapid pace of technological change of late, of personal technology, meaning, you know, portable technology, small d democratized technology, so it's very, very widespread, and technology that really does impact us every single day in terms of usability, portability, and applicability to just our lives, certainly has accelerated that. And when you emphasize, as you did before, an organizational context, that's something worth talking about as well. Why are we perceiving this at an 80% clip? Another reason is our organizations are different. They're flatter in many regards. More and more organizations are moving away from that sort of traditional pyramid, very hierarchical organizational structure with those clearly defined levels of management.
Are
and support.
You talking about the guy who's the CEO and then he has four executive vice presidents, and then he has, you know, and each one of them lead a group, and then you get down to the 100 or more.
Down at the base.
Right, who were recently hired and at the lowest level position.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So as that, when you remove layers of hierarchy in an organization, which certainly in the past, let's say the previous 20 to 50 years, those layers of hierarchy often fall out along demographic or generational lines. Once you squish organizations together and make them a lot flatter and rely on teams a lot more, you're having people from different generations encountering each other with a lot more frequency at the workplace. And then there's a little element of sort of generational steroids, I think, that you add to that, which is the simple fact of longevity, that we're all living significantly longer now. So one observer of these trends, demographics and gerontology, et cetera, she recently commented that we need to retire the term retirement, because that whole phenomenon of retirement, of working up to a certain magical age, after which point you'll leave the workforce for good and embark on some extended period of leisure, and then you check out, that's changing dramatically. I mean, when the Social Security Administration first set the retirement age at 65, guess what the average American male's life expectancy was?
I'll say 68.
63, actually.
Oh.
Because they weren't expecting to be, you know, paying out to gigantic cohorts of people for an extended period of time. So the whole notion of retirement is changing. We have, you mentioned the different cohorts, the traditionalists, who is the most experienced group.
Yeah, define those for me.
Sure.
Let's list the four and define them.
Sure, let me do that, and then we can hop back to the retirement issue. So Four cohorts in the workforce, and I mean, these are fairly widely used labels or terms to describe them. The traditionalists, so that's the most experienced, and you can go by rough birth dates. In general, we'll often say that traditionalists now were born about prior to 1946, 1947. Anyone, you know, but before that, obviously it's a declining cohort in terms of numbers.
That's the grandfathers.
It is. It's a lot of your
grandfathers,
great grandfathers. Yeah, depending on where you are, it's 70 somethings, some late 60 somethings. It depends. There's fluidity in these definitions. It's a cohort of about 50 to 52 million Americans. They were at one point referred to as the veteran generation, but of course that doesn't really make much sense anymore. We have veterans who are 21 years old now from Iraq and Afghanistan and other deployments. So that's the most experienced cohort. And in fact, if you watch the show Mad Men on AMC, that show, in fact, depicts the traditionalists, but when they were in their 30s. It's really a slice of that cohort, but when they were younger. Then we move on to the baby boomers. It's probably the most familiar to the majority of Americans. That term has been around for a long time, simply capturing the demographic explosion. We went from 52 million traditionalists up to about 70 to 75 million baby boomers. So obviously a major demographic explosion. And the birth dates for that cohort run, 1946, 1947, up till the early 60s. And of all of the generations, I mean, it's important to note that there is fluidity. It's not hard and fast. If you say, well, I'm born in 1964, well, the chart says that I'm a boomer, but I've never really felt like one. I'm not going to put you in a corner and say, yes, you are, Rick. Go over there, stand in the baby boomer corner. It doesn't work that way. So boomers from 46 to about anywhere between 60 to 64. There is a transition period or fluidity. And again, these are rough birth dates. Half of your sociologists who work in what we call cohort theory say the baby boom ends around 60, 61. Another half, I mean, really, the literature is divided pretty evenly, say, no, you really can creep the boom up to about 64, and then the next cohort starts, and the next one is Generation X. Generation X is from somewhere around 60, 64 up until about 1980 is the cutoff point where we start to transition into the millennials. Generation X is the smallest of the generations. It's only about 47 or 48 million strong. Often the most overlooked when organizations look at this particular issue, because they're then followed by the cohort where there is the most interest and the most poked and prodded generation in American history, which is the millennials. That is synonymous with Generation Y, and they are about 1980 to 2000. So
you're saying, because that was a question, Generation Y is to include sort of the younger group. Now we call them the millennials instead.
Millennials and Generation Y are synonymous. They're interchangeable. It really depends on the term. It's a pet peeve of mine, I'll confess. It was never meant to be alphabetical, to go from X to Y, and then. But in popular media, that was captured pretty quickly. But actually, as a cohort, that group self-identifies preferring being referred to as millennials. So that's the term that.
All right.
That
so we have using. Four groups that we're going to be talking about today. The traditionals. The oldest group, the grandfathers, great-grandfathers, the baby boomers, who everyone is probably quite familiar with through popular media, the Generation X group, who are often the overlooked and left out, and then the millennials, who are the youngest group out there now.
Right, so four cohorts, and jumping back to our retirement conversation, like why are people feeling this at an 80% clip? Retirement is part of that because of longevity, because the lifespan of Americans in general jumped in the previous century. In 1900, average American lifespan was 47 years. In 2000, when we had our last census data, it was 77. It's a 30-year jump. Well, I mean, you can do the math. If you are living longer, you're probably going to be working longer.
I said something earlier on about the technology. Mm-hmm. You not only have the technology in the workplace that might break people up as to who's familiar with what, et cetera, but I would assume that there's the technology in the health group as well that helps people live longer.
Yes.
And then you don't have the money to retire at 65 and then do something. Mm-hmm. Whether it's fun or not, for another 12 years.
You're exactly right. The underexplored impact of longevity on our organizations and then on this multi-generational mix is extremely powerful. What we're finding is increasingly more and more Americans, exactly as you're saying, can't afford to retire, at least under that traditional view or vision we had of retirement, which is I'll hit 65 or 68 or 70 and I'll leave work for good, never to return. Even predating the most recent economic downturn, we had 2 to 4 million traditionalists of the oldest cohort. So oftentimes people in their early 70s going back to work, mostly in a part-time capacity, for a number of reasons. Some of it is financial. They actually are concerned about outliving their nest eggs and so want to adjust and augment their retirement savings. And also going back because if you're living longer and healthier, you want to contribute. You can only do the leisure thing perhaps for so long.
The welcomers at the Walmart.
You're exactly right. In fact, the number one place where you'll see it and where listeners will notice it, if this hasn't been on your radar, it will now, is in service industries, is in retail. When you go to Chipotle or you go to Target or Walmart or McDonald's or CVS or even Home Depot, you will notice, if you haven't before, a rise in the number of traditionalists, people who might look a lot more like your parents, if let's say you're a 40-something, working in mostly a part-time capacity. It's very much a function of this longevity revolution. Living longer is great, but it has a significant ripple effect. And then it raises this issue. It puts it even more so on people's own radar, because we are all working with people from a much broader range of generations than ever before. And in fact, I mentioned CVS and Home Depot. Those are two organizations who consciously recruit traditionalists. They actively reach out, in Home Depot's case, to men of the generation, because the assumption is, it's based on a customer assumption, that if I walk into Home Depot and I'm working on a deck and I need some assistance and some input, and, you know, I'll exaggerate the choice for effect, but door number one is a multiply pierced and inked 22-year-old, and door number two, the guy is a gentleman who looks remarkably like Senator McCain. I'm going to go to door number two. My assumption is going to be that you know, more senior person has experience in this field, and it's borne out. We actually have data. There was a Wall Street Journal report a couple of years ago about the decline in manual labor experience amongst younger Americans. They're doing different things in their summers, et cetera. CVS, just to wrap it up, doing the same thing. CVS consciously recruiting traditionalists in large part to work the register in the pharmacy. So if you're running a CVS, Rick, there are a lot of people looking for work. Why traditionalists? Why put them at the top of your recruiting list?
I have no idea.
You have no idea.
Well, I mean, I can understand at the Home Depot.
Home Depot. Yeah.
But at CVS, I'm not sure that I recognize a difference there.
It's a customer experience thing as well, where still a significant percentage of the CVS customers in the pharmacy are traditionalists. And so when you walk in...
Ah, so you see your friend.
And if it's not a friend, you see somebody who looks like you.
Right.
And you immediately feel a comfort level. CVS is so committed to it that they actually will help seniors or traditionalists who do the snowbirding thing. So like my mom, who lives in Massachusetts, she will head south for a couple of months in the winter, you know, get away from the cold. And if you work at a CVS in the Northeast, they will help facilitate you finding a part-time job with CVS, so to stay within the organization, in Florida or
because
Georgia,
I would assume
you're
that the number of customers picks up in the South as well.
That's exactly right.
All right.
Yeah.
11:17 here on the Wake Up Call. Pete Ronayne, FEI, Federal Executive Institute, Dean of Faculty. We're talking about generations, and specifically generational differences and how that affects the workplace. Write down the phone number, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. We'll be taking questions in just a minute or two, comments as well. Pete, we're talking about the differences in generations and how some businesses are specifically seeking folks of different generations that you might not have seen there before. Will any generation member, whether the traditionalist, the grandfather, as opposed to the baby boomer or the millennial, the youngest crowd, which I guess goes to age 30 based on this sort of fluid group.
Mm-hmm.
Will any each generation do each and every job?
Yeah, it's a good question. And first, let me say it, and this is important because I'm sure some listeners have thought about this. We are in the business of generalizing this morning. So I think an easy way to talk about this is a lot of the traits and characteristics that we'll talk about, which are borne out by lots of research and sociological inquiry and surveys and longitudinal studies, are about a critical mass within each generation, right? Where we're not going to stereotype everybody into a particular group. That important caveat being said, I think to answer your question, where we find the most distinction or difference is really on, I think, sort of the impatience factor or the high expectations factor of younger Americans. And there are several sources of this. I mean, youthful impatience is a product of life stage, first and foremost. When you and I were younger, we're still very young men, but when we were younger, we too were impatient to move through our first organization more quickly. And you want to advance, and you think you're bringing a lot to the table, et cetera. That's a hallmark of youth. So life stage is part of this. But there are some other things that I think make younger Americans, millennials in this case, less interested in some of the manual labor stuff, the more administrative, the the clerical. And I think one factor involving that is impatience and their extremely high expectations. This is in large part, especially middle and upper socioeconomic millennials, a cohort that has been raised with extremely positive messaging about how smart they are, how talented they are. This is a cohort it's part of the trophy kid generation, where there's been a quantitatively measured increase in grade inflation, in awards, in certificates, et cetera. And so I think that makes them slightly less interested or more impatient about moving from the entry level through the organization.
11:20 on the Wake Up Call with Pete Ronayne as we talk about generational differences. Caller, hang on just a second. I do have a caller, but let me do some business at hand. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's mostly cloudy today with chance of showers pretty much throughout the listening area. Highs 75 to 80, lower 80s in Richmond. Mostly cloudy tonight, again with a good chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the mid-60s. And then partly cloudy tomorrow, again, chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the mid-80s. Right now, it's cloudy out there, 70 in the valley, 72 in Lynchburg, 72 in Richmond, and a nice warm 70 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank the folks at Sugar Snap. They offer gently used baby and kids items, including shoes and hats, plus maternity and nursing clothes. You'll also find cloth diapers and diaper bags and locally made items. They have a kid-friendly play area for you to use while you shop. You can become a fan of Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter, and you can find them in the shopper's world here in Charlottesville. And don't forget, those of you who are listening in the Stanton-Waynesboro area, change is coming. Specifically, the frequency you listen to on WNRN is going to change to 101.1. Keep listening, checking the website for details. The programming you enjoy now will soon be heard with a more powerful signal on 101.1. All right, Pete, are you ready?
I'm ready to roll.
All right, and let's see if... Dan, are you still there?
I'm here.
Thank you so much for waiting. We got Dan from Richmond. Question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, this might be a little off topic, but I made the mistake when I lived in Charlottesville turning into the facility across from Bodo's, and it had a rather clandestine, feel to it. They took my driver's license and my license plate, and I really just made a wrong turn. Is there any reason for the security at your facility?
Let me ask you real quick, Dan. How old are you? Are you a millennial where we don't trust you anymore?
I'm 28.
Oh, right. Well, that alone would get you stopped. That's no.
Yeah, Pete, why is it such a crazy area up on the hill, gates, et cetera?
Two basic reasons, and it's nothing mysterious about it, in fact. And it is off topic, but it's interesting. We could do a whole show on FEI sometime if you want. It actually wasn't that long ago, and it won't surprise any listeners that pre-9/11, you could drive up right to the front door of the Federal Executive Institute, walk into the lobby and chat with the receptionist and kind of just sort of be there. After that, concerns across all federal institutions, particularly when we have a number of senior executives in residence at any one time. But even more importantly, in the case of a significant event in the D.C. area, FEI serves as a COOP site, which is a continuity of operations center for the director of federal HR. So that individual and his or her staff would come down to FEI. When anything like that is in place, there are just basic federal guidelines for security, which requires additional fencing, et cetera. And that's what you experienced.
Hey Dan, when you get a little older, when you got 3 or 4 years and you change generations, you'll be all right. There'll be another group younger than you.
Yeah, well, I lived in Charlottesville for about 3 years, and I never knew what that building was, but it's been very informative, to say the least.
Good. Well, we're happy to demystify it, and I'll see if we can have an open house sometime.
Hey, Dan, let me ask you a question while you're on the phone.
Yep.
All right, so we're talking about generations in the workplace. Can you tell me your workplace? You don't have to give a name if you're concerned, but do you work in a large workplace, a small number workplace?
Yeah, so I work, I'm in sales for a industrial chemical company, and I work at the branch level, so it's rather small, I would say. But, yeah, growing up in the summers, I was not afraid of manual labor and had several jobs doing construction, landscaping, and, that's how I spent my college summers.
Well, one of the things that that Pete and I are going to get into in just a moment is the impatience, as Pete already mentioned, of the younger generation feeling that they can sort of stick with one group and work their way to the top because people at the top aren't retiring and letting the next group move up, move up, move up. Do you have plans to stay with this organization for a while, or is this something that you want to be able to enjoy, put on your resume, and then move forward or sideways?
Yeah, I think ultimately, I'm motivated by pay, and sounds a little shallow, but, you know, we work to make money, so my goal is to maximize, you know, my pay and happiness, you know, hopefully doing something that I enjoy while at the same time, you know. Have I found my passion yet? No, and I'm still in search of it, you know, whether that involves working in a service industry in a manual labor capacity. I think my goal would be to be involved in ownership somehow. At that level, you know, you maximize your income. To answer your question, no. I'm not, you know, set in stone with my current company. And I think on the flip side, companies today, especially in the last, you know, 3 years, my company included, have made significant decreases. So that loyalty to the employee isn't there either. So, you know, it's a two-way street. Employers don't have the same loyalty, and therefore, I think, you know, the employer not having loyalty, the employee kind of feels that and, you know, starts to put feelers out and look for alternate avenues of, you know, income or ways to make a living.
All right, Dan, you have pushed us on to the next question on my end. Thanks so much for your call.
All right, great.
All right, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks, 1127 on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Pete Ronayne here, as we talk about generational differences in the workplace. Pete, the caller had a great push about how the companies no longer have the same loyalty. In fact, I think one of the things that many people feel, regardless of what generation you are in, is that whatever generation is near the top is sort of skipping over the middle generation behind them and going to the millennials to pull them in because they can pay them the least, because they feel that they can mold them the best.
Yeah, I think the comments about loyalty is extremely salient, and not just recently. In fact, this is a factor that has really shaped workforce and career expectations, starting, frankly, with the cohort before, which is Generation X. So your current, a big crop of them are 40-somethings right now. This begins when the economic landscape in the United States shifts in the 80s and, frankly, again in the early 90s with two series of significant layoffs and downsizing. So starting with Xers, Xers really were the first of these two younger cohorts who saw their parents, their aunts, their uncles, their friends' parents, who were, up to that point in large part, the loyal organization man or company man or woman, laid off, downsized, et cetera. It really then shifted in sort of their, if you will, economic worldview and organizational worldview definitions of loyalty. When I speak on this issue, the loyalty issue comes up time and time again, and it's a classic pattern where more senior and experienced employees say, yeah, these young people, very broadly defined, right, aren't loyal anymore. And, of course, all groups, any cohort, will define themselves as loyal. What we're talking about with both Xers and millennials now is, first and foremost, not blind loyalty. There is no assumption that this is going, when I come into a job or an organization, whether I'm 22 or, frankly, at this point, 32 or 42, that this is necessarily a lifelong pact. Xers, for example, in surveys consistently say they would love to find that organizational home. They just don't necessarily expect it. So the notion is, I'll be loyal to you here at WNRN as long as this work is rewarding, it's challenging, I feel reasonably compensated. Pay, in fact, tends to be a little bit lower for most people. But because starting in the 80s and continuing, that pact or that covenant between employer and employee was very much broken. Xers and millennials both have completely different expectations about what that relationship is going to be like, and therefore are much more willing to leave or to be constantly looking for another job, another organization, if expectations aren't met, if it isn't interesting, if they're working for a boss who's insufferable, if they're not getting the professional development they were hoping to get. If you weren't expecting to be there for 15 or 20 years to begin with, it's much easier to leave after two or three. That's been a sea change starting in the 1980s for the youngest two cohorts.
11:30 here on WNRN as we talk about generational differences in the workplace. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to have the conversation today. You can find them at Meade Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts and sportswear. Professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. All right, let's see. We have a phone call from Rice in Charlottesville. Rice.
Hello.
Hey, fire away. Questions or comments?
All right. I'm definitely middle of the generation. I was born in 72. And I own a restaurant here in town, and we have a great mix of customer base generationally. But for the most part, our staff is very young. And I was curious what you guys thought about how we should approach this to make both our older customers and our younger staff feel both comfortable and valuable.
Yeah, because, Pete, this goes on, I mean, at the restaurant, but this goes on to the factory workplace. This goes on to the standard white suit, you know, white shirt workplace, et cetera.
Yeah, and if I can ask the caller, how or what issues have you encountered? What bubbles up for you in this regard?
Right, so what...
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble. I should turn my radio off. I'm having trouble hearing.
That's right. So Pete wants to know, what issues have you had pop up where this makes you call in?
Well, we haven't really had any, but we certainly have times where, you know, some of our older customers are in and maybe the music is loud or of a style that they're not interested in, or, you know, at the same time, maybe we're listening to WTJU jazz section or the opera and our younger staff is getting annoyed by that. And there's obvious generational differences that I encounter on a regular basis.
Yes, I mean, certainly.
And, based on what y'all were talking about earlier, how, you know, you would suggest that we approach this try to smooth things out between the generations.
All right, Pete?
Yeah, that's a great point. Certainly musically, we see change, and there's nothing new here. You know, music styles shift and change. The biggest change in terms of music, and it's slightly not an answer to your question, but, you know, younger Americans are actually far more eclectic in their musical awareness and interests, and that's because of what Rick mentioned early on in the show, technology. It makes the full range of musical styles, past and present, affordable and available to us. Now, one of the things that we find organizationally that is often missing, and it's so simple, and maybe because it's so easy, it's overlooked, is how many organizations, how many supervisors, boss, and managers don't sit down with younger employees, let's say sitting down with a wait staff and ask them about what's working and what isn't working. And why that's so powerful is, number one, you have a cohort of particularly younger people who are very accustomed to being asked for their opinions. This is in large part about almost a revolution in parenting. If you think about I think about how I was parented. My parents were great, you know, loved me tremendously, but I didn't have any say. Did you have any say in the house, Rick?
No.
Yeah.
Not really.
In a word, no. You know, my dad was a benevolent dictator. I mean, he was definitely benevolent, but not a lot to say. I think in one, if maybe not a generation and a half, how quickly that has changed, where we as parents, and very well-intentioned, are far more inclusive, provide our young people with much more say into whether it's grocery lists or weekend plans or summer vacations or what they want to do after school. They have a lot more input. So many organizations are shocked, in fact, by what they perceive as sort of a boldness or audacity from some of their millennial employees when they come into work. And the older employees' perspective is, you're young, you're green, you really don't have much to say. And I really shouldn't be hearing that much from you. Younger employees who are accustomed to being asked for their opinion from day one are extremely comfortable voicing their opinion. So just a simple conversation about it can reap tremendous rewards, because it creates a culture where the younger employees are feeling heard and listened to. And they are quite interested in being able to provide their perspective, especially on things besides technology. Too often I have older employees who they want to have a sort of a mutual mentoring relationship with younger employees, but they view younger employees solely through the lens of being technologically advanced. So they want to mine them for that. Well, of course, they have other perspectives about what would be a good mix of music that would be conducive to dining. What are ideas about better service, et cetera. So very simple, very straightforward, but actually having a conversation so it isn't a boomer and Xer trying to figure out on their own what does this group want, when we just simply ask them.
All right, well, thank you very much. I'm going to go off the air so I can listen. Thank you.
Thanks. And, you know, the other thing, too, these great questions about organizations. One of the fun things about this topic, and I'm sure some of it is resonating with listeners, is it's both professional and it's personal. This is about understanding what's happening in American organizations from a values perspective, a motivation perspective, et cetera. It's also a real window into our kids, into our nieces, our nephews, understanding our parents. So the personal and the professional merge extremely well in this regard.
11:36 on the wake-up call. Dial up with your question or your comment. Again, everybody listening falls into one of these generational categories, so you should have a comment or a question about how to move forward with the conversation. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
With his quiet demeanor and a dog by his side, Bill Emery has spent decades capturing our town through his camera. His images are part art, part documentary, and on the cover of this week's Hook. A 65-year-old clerk was recently assaulted, and the shop owner says police have done little investigation, with a neighboring business having the suspects on video, but the police having failed to obtain the video days later. And an update on the story of missing Bell Rio owner Jim Baldy. The Hook, all it needs is a loving home. And support for today's programming also comes from Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro. They feature male and female tattoo artists. They have thousands of designs available and can create work from a design you provide. Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro or here in Charlottesville on 701 West Main Street. For more information online, benaroundtattoos.com. All right, questions again with Pete Ronayne from the Federal Executive Institute, where he is the Dean of Faculty. Pete, we were talking about sort of the squishing of the workplace, because the traditionalists, the oldest group, hasn't retired for many reasons. And the younger group, the millennials coming up, and even the group above them, the Generation X folks, nowhere to go.
Yeah,
in so many places. Is this why we're having so many more entrepreneurial groups, and possibly many of them, maybe a larger percentage than might statistically be expected, being from the younger generations?
It definitely is a factor. You're pointing to a really interesting part of generational or demographic turbulence in our organizations. And in fact, while 2 to 4 million traditionalists are coming back to work every year because of this changing definition of retirements and nibbling away at comfortable nest eggs, the real pressure that you're talking about is coming from the cohort before them, which is the baby boomers. It's the baby boomers, in fact, who, in a way that people had not predicted, are not retiring, at least according to projections. I can speak from the public sector, for example, and some private sector organizations as well. In the late 90s, early 2000s, there was significant concern and consternation that, oh my gosh, we're going to have this massive brain drain. Right? Our organizations are going to lose this huge cadre of experienced baby boomers who have been leading these organizations and moving them into the future. They're approaching retirement. They're approaching retirement age, 65, 66, and we're going to have this huge exodus. We've got to get on board with succession planning. We've got a plan for this, et cetera. This retirement tsunami is going to happen. Well, it turns out that it really hasn't happened. And in fact, it's sort of what I would refer to as a baby boomer paradox, in that that generation, that 75 million strong, is large enough for two seemingly contradictory forces to be happening. Number one, yes, we had more people than we had experienced before retire within a relatively short period of time than we had experienced ever before. However, at the same time, because that generation is so large, we had more people stay as well. So both things were true. And when more people stay, when boomers are staying in jobs, it's created what we refer to as a gray ceiling. And the gray ceiling impacts Xers more than any other cohort, where you're that a mid-level Gen X and employee in whatever organization or field, and you had predicted or projected moving up into the next tier, let's say, in that organization. But that isn't happening for you, and it's not because you're not talented, not because you haven't worked hard enough, not because you're not creative. It's because your way is simply blocked by baby boomers not retiring. Why are they not retiring? Because baby boomers, again, we're talking about a critical mass. We're talking on the whole. I'm generalizing. But as a generation, they are the least prepared for retirement of any generation up to this point. The baby boomer culture has not been a culture of thrift and savings, which defines, for example, my grandparents and my parents even. Not at all. Baby boomers are a consumer generation. They are not a depression era generation. They were not shaped and formed by those sort of values of saving and thrift. They were shaped by boom, by prosperity, by plenty. And that the seeds of that were planted when they were very young. And so their economic behavior throughout their trajectory has been spending, not saving. So they are the least prepared for retirement. Therefore, a large swath of that population has to stay and work. They're not financially prepared for retirement, and the gray ceiling is created. That then leads to the entrepreneurship that you're talking about. In fact, the fastest growing sector, cohort in terms of a small business and entrepreneurship, going out on your own, is Generation X and Millennial women.
WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Rick Moore talking with our guest Pete Ronayne. Pete, and again, we've mentioned several times that we're sort of grouping everyone together with terms and ideology and numbers that don't hit the particular person. But I think for many people, the millennials are lazy, and the Generation X group is selfish.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When you talk about not having money saved and not being prepared for retirement, it seems to me that the Generation X group are the ones who turn down promotions and increase in responsibilities because of the way they don't want it to affect their lifestyle, because they don't want to have to move, because they don't want to move from working 40 to 45 hours to 55 or 60 hours.
Yep.
And that the group, the generations above them, are blown away by why in the world you would do this.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. And that you're talking to another, I would argue, relatively seismic shift in workplace values and attitudes that are shaped generationally. What we're talking about when observers say Xers, or as you mentioned, millennials are lazy, often what they're pointing to and what they're mislabeling is in fact a concern about balance, about work-life balance, or family work balance, if you have a family. You know, balance is an issue that boomers and traditionalists did not talk about. It was not on their radar. It was simply not a priority. They define work and career very, very differently. starting with Xers. And again, this is not unrelated to them seeing very committed and hardworking parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles who put in lots of hours in the organization, laid off or let go. It really starts to send a different message than that's internalized, that, you know, work is going to be important to me, but as Xers will often phrase it, work is just part of my broader life portfolio. I'm going to have a life outside of work. The work is going to be there. So for both Xers and Millennials, our two youngest cohorts, employees under the age of 40, when surveyed, consistently place in their top five, if not top three, workplace values, balance and flexibility. Boomers and traditionalists, while it is starting to become more important for them because of life stage issues, it generally is not a top five value. So that notion of it's not about being lazy, it's about defining the role of work in one's life quite differently. This is important, for example, with, let's say, Xer fathers. Xer fathers are much more involved in the lives and the rearing, raising of their children than the cohort before them. That requires time. That requires flexibility. There's a reason why one of the large movements afoot that organizations of all kinds are dealing with is that flexible work arrangements, or as two authors have coined it, they refer to the row, the results-only work environment. What is the row? The row is basically we're not going to micromanage your butt-in-seat time. It's about your performance. So if, Rick, if your job allows you this sort of flexibility, you know, I don't care if you come in at 9 and leave at 9, or if you come in at 11:30 and leave at 3. I mean, if you're getting done what you need to get done, when I need it done, and at the quality I need done, that's what I'm going to manage for results. And that fits extremely well with both Xers and Millennials who are committed to balance. There are legions of stories about both members of both cohorts, as you said, turning down perhaps a promotion or more responsibility because it would adversely impact this notion of work-life balance. That is a huge change in organizations that lots are really grappling with. And an example of leaders in this is both Sony Pictures in the U.S. and Best Buy. At Best Buy headquarters, all of their employees now, headquarters employees, not the retail outlets, are on a row environment, a results-only work environment, meaning you can come and go whenever you want, as long as you're getting the job done. I mean, that's pretty important. Now, if let's say you're running a restaurant, as one of our callers, you say, well, that's not going to work for me. I can't have people working from home. It's results only, not remote only. So if your job requires that certain hours of the day you are at work to wait tables or sell stereos, et cetera, then naturally you need to be there, and the sort of uber flexibility isn't available to you. But we can take the concept of row, the concept of flexibility, and apply it to almost any organization, giving people more autonomy, and it makes them far more committed, far more engaged, because they feel like they're better managing that work-life balance. That's a key value issue.
11:47 on the wake-up call. Rick Moore here with Pete Ronayne talking about generational differences in the workplace. And now we have Fred from Whitehall. Fred, where have you been?
Rick, I haven't spoken with you in quite a while. It's good to hear your voice again.
Well, thank you, and yours as well. Comment or question for Pete?
Well, I had some trivia. I heard entrepreneur TJN and music, and so I thought I would relay a little history on the TJN. In the good old days in the 60s, when you could rent the ballroom, my friends that were home in the from school in the summer, we would rent places and have fantastic parties. And the TJN, I think, was the last party we had. It was totally packed in the ballroom. And we had Matt Quinton, who was a retired county sheriff, as our security guard to make sure everyone stayed straight. And the reason our last party was closed up is that some young lady decided to disrobe in the parking lot, and so every law enforcement agency in the county came to close us down. So we would have roving parties at different people's houses, especially when their parents were out of town. But TJ Young was probably the best one we ever had. And I'm sorry I can't go up and look over the place anymore because of the fencing, et cetera. It used to be a nice place to go and just, check it out. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, and for listeners, just to clarify, the Federal Executive Institute used to be the Thomas Jefferson Inn, a pretty nice hotel in its day. So yeah, great trivia and a little generational story.
Yes, and I'm sorry I missed the last part of it. The disrobing sounds like it would have been good to go there just for that. 11:49 on the wake-up call, and I see the phone ringing again, so dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Pete, we've talked several times about how things have sort of squished together in the workplace because the older, the traditionalists, and the older of the baby boomers have not retired, but we've still seen such changes as casual Friday. How does that happen?
Yeah, well, that comes up a huge amount. I get lots of very, very negative comments about the over-casualizing of the American workplace and captured in younger Americans. And I think our initial reactions to that are unfair because they miss the fact that American society is a society of casual, and we have been evolving to becoming more and more casual over time. I mentioned the TV show Mad Men before. That's a great benchmark to look at the dress and the style of employees throughout that organization in that show and how it's changed over time. As you mentioned, we would go to casual Fridays, then it was sort of business casual. And I think the culmination of this for many people is the whole notion of flip-flops at work. There's a great story and event from several years back when there was a Northwestern women's lacrosse team met with President Bush at the White House, and they were the national champions, and there was this little tumult and furor about it because they took their picture. There's a picture of them, and I actually have a copy of it. It's great. And they're standing there with the president, the whole team, and just across the front row, you can see the young ladies in the front row with at least half of them have flip-flops on. And if there is a place that's more formal than the White House in the United States, I don't know where it is. So younger Americans in particular are a product of us all being more casual. We all dress down. They're a product of informality in general. I think another good anecdote is, I'll ask you, I'll put you on the spot. When you were growing up, how did you refer to your parents' adult friends? What did you call them?
Oh, Mr. and Mrs.
Mr. and Mrs., yes.
I still do that, and I'm at the age now where I guess it makes some of them feel uncomfortable because it makes them feel old.
Older, yes.
And some of them are they're fine with it because that's how the smaller town that I'm from, that's just what happens.
Yes, yes. And I was raised exactly the same way, and I have the same crisis when I'm with my parents' friends now because it's hard for me. They'll say, call me Tom, call me Jill, and I can't.
Right.
My point is, we know now, and I do this with my own kids, that they'll often call my adult friends by their first names, or sometimes we do the half measure, you know, Mr. Pete, Mr. Rick, that sort of thing. That is a measure of informality. So we've raised our kids to be a lot less formal, both in dress and address. And so they're the natural products of that. It's not their choice. It's how they've been raised.
All right. We have Rob from Crozet. Hey, Rob.
Hello.
Thank you for hanging on. Question or comment for Pete?
Well, yeah, my question for Pete is as follows, is that I'm interested, I guess at the beginning of the show, as dean of the faculty, you made reference to sort of the changes in educational approaches that, you know, millennials and perhaps even the Gen Xers are embracing today. I was wondering if you could go and characterize or provide some examples of the way that the faculty has had to go and adjust teaching styles to deal with these different methods of learning. I mean, I'm a baby boomer. I was used to going and you sit in a class, you take notes, you read the books, you do the test, you finish the course. What's happening today, either within FEI or without FEI, as far as the teaching methods that the faculty has had to adopt to go and deal with different methods of learning?
Fascinating question that, to broaden it, that higher education in general, colleges and universities are really grappling with. And like many things in American society, the pendulum seems to swing. For a while, there were all these wild assumptions that, well, it all needs to be online. We can move from bricks and mortar. Students just want lots of video clips, et cetera. Let's make it virtual. Let's do everything online. And then the pendulum sort of swings back. So I would say that the middle ground, what we're finding most effective, is not surprisingly then blended learning. There was a study done in the UK of college and university students there where they basically were asking them to rate and comment on the classes they enjoyed the most and what were the hallmarks of those classes. And it's not that they were technologically driven. It's that they were technologically supported with materials easily accessible in advance, even lecture notes and slides in advance. what they most enjoyed in the classroom was not necessarily the flashy bells and whistles and all that sort of thing. What they enjoyed still most in the classroom, and this might surprise some listeners, was a classroom experience that was social. A classroom experience that meant engagement with their peers and the professor. Not the sage on the stage just delivering content for 2 or 3 hours, but some content delivery, but then facilitated and moderated discussion, augmented from time to time with a YouTube clip or a video clip. But most of that stuff being provided in advance in a just-in-time way so that you can get to it when you want. But students rated by far most highly a social experience in the classroom. That seems kind of old school, but I think that blended approach is where the most successful instructors, colleges, and universities are going to move.
Well, Greg, thank you.
Sure. Thanks for the question.
All right, Rob. Thank you, man. Rob from Crozet with our call. We probably have time for one more if somebody dials up real quick. 979-0919, 1155 here on the Wake Up Call. I do want to remind everyone that today's programming is also supported by the Bud Light Concert Series at the Charlottesville Pavilion, and we're presenting Primus and Gorgel Bordello tonight at 7 p.m., and since 1984, singer and bassist Les Claypool has led the funk metal fusion band Primus, and Gorgel Bordello is a gypsy punk band from New York. Tickets for tonight's show still available. Go online, charlottesvillepavilion.com. And my man, Drew Thompson, here in the studio, here for in just a few minutes for Les Temps Purdue. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. I do see that the phone is ringing. We have that caller and their question, Jen, in just a minute. Pete, generational differences in the workplace. What happens for the inverted group? How does a traditionalist or the baby boomer work best for the millennial?
Yeah, and that's a really important factor, because what we're finding is more and more both Xers, more Xers actually, but eventually millennials, sort of leading up generationally. What I mean by that is leading, managing, supervising individuals who are significantly older than they are, and that can raise all sorts of issues and tensions. You hear lots of comments that, you know, my colleagues, my employees treat me like I'm their son or their daughter. They feel patronized, et cetera. One thing, I think most important advice that I try to provide to younger employees who find themselves in the supervisory and managerial role is to do as much as you can to respect the experience and listen to the voice of experience. Because, look, you don't have to be older to be creative or entrepreneurial or imaginative, et cetera, but you do have to be older to have experience. I mean, that's just simple math. So creating venues, again, for input, for tapping into that voice of experience to use experienced employees in a powerful deputy role, and furthermore, to create and tap into multi-generational teams whenever possible. We know, I mean, research shows us time and time again that organizations that tap into diversity as much as possible in all of its forms and shapes, we often think about it just in terms of race and gender, but generational difference is part of diversity. The more we create teams, and if you're a younger employee, the more you can tap into and create teams that leverage generational diversity and the perspectives that brings, the much greater your chance of success.
But to continue on with the sort of inverted question is, doesn't each generation has what seem to me to be quite different expectations about what to get out of the workplace,
right,
what to provide as the employee, and what to get from the employer. And, you know, I would, and again, I'm assuming that the traditionalist has led a lifestyle in one way, and now they have someone leading them, which must be sort of, you know, mind-boggling as to how can we do it this way, and how can I enjoy coming to work and not have the upset stomach?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think if there's one overarching piece of advice, and actually comes from millennials themselves, it's a variation on what we know as the golden rule, which is, you know, do unto others as you'd have done unto yourself. The variation on that's getting more and more play is the platinum rule. And the platinum rule is to do unto others as the other would like done unto them. So regardless of your age as a manager or supervisor, again, ask your employees what they're interested in. Ask them what motivates them. Don't make assumptions that their worldview, that their values are necessarily exactly the same as yours. And once you get beyond, you know, fundamental ground rules and requirements of any organization, there's room for flexibility. There's room for individualizing a little bit more. And we do find that a lot of those preferences and motivations will often fall out on generational lines. But if you ask people, again, that gives you tremendous power, tremendous ability to be flexible and to tap into motivation when you put this platinum rule into effect.
Pete Ronayne, Federal Executive Institute's Dean of Faculty. Fascinating. Fascinating hour of conversation. I hope everyone else enjoyed this as well. And we will post it. It will be podcast, www.cvillepodcast.com. Pete, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Next weekend, tune in again, because we will have both the Charlottesville and the Albemarle County school superintendents in the room together for the conversation. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.